Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get this thing kicked out. Let's get this
Information, but it took up the entire show.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to talk about any quick hit news, really, or anything else.
He's been doing multiple disciplines of fighting.
know, so this is not just Herschel Walker waking up one day and saying, you know, I'm going to fight. And if you got to see the Ultimate Fighter show last night, we're going to talk about it like a little bit later, maybe we'll just go into it now, but there is a guy, Marcus Jones, on that show, who was a former football player, and he's on the Ultimate Fighter. And getting all this airtime, and he's a big wuss. I mean, I'm sorry, man. He's a big wuss. And all he does is complain and limp around, and he's going to get hurt next week. We already seen the previews. And it's going to give Kimbo another shot, but, again, it's just crazy. That Dana White would go and talk trash about a guy like Herschel Walker, who's a proven athlete, not only a proven athlete, but a star athlete from football.
I got to meet Herschel about 15 or 17, no, more than that. I met Herschel, I guess it was back in 1992, 17 years ago, when he was playing for the Philadelphia Eagles. And I remember when they had signed him that off team, and they were talking about his workout regimen. And it was like, you know, like 1,000 push-ups every day, like 2,000 sit-ups, running so many miles. There was no miles in the 5 that I'm doing now. And you figure this guy was also an Olympic athlete. I think it was in 92 that he did the bobsledding.
Right.
So, I mean, this guy was a Spartan athlete. Now, I don't know what he has done in a martial arts type of fighting. I don't know how he's trained in that. I don't know, how his skills he is. But as a pure athlete, even at 47, you're not going to find him any better.
No, I mean, especially if you really believe that he's running 5 to 8 miles a day.
Probably. From his training regimen, when he was in the Philadelphia Eagles, they went to the discussion of the condition that was absolutely set.
Yeah. And I might as well just all put it all out there. I don't know if you got to watch The Ultimate Fighter or if you even thought to watch it last night. But
I was watching my team clinch the NLE last night.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know there was that baseball history going on. Oh, really? You're going to give the Yankees that much credit? Just overlook the Red Sox like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Red Sox.
I'm going to tell you what's funny, man.
A couple
of Boston fans I know, just as they're talking trash, it's like, if that Phillies Red Sox series, if you guys put some post together saying, you Phillies fans, we just proved to you that we loaned you the World Series title. Let's think about the Boston this year. That was a trip, bro. I said, game one was the blown call in the extra inning that they gave you to the Phillies. Well, it didn't, so I'm all about it. Maybe we can better than two. And then he's like, and we're kicking the Yankee fans. We're up to about 8-1 this year. And he told all the shit. Then they put the poke together yesterday. The Yankee fans, that's how you know. You're sleep clean 0-0 right now. Thank you, Grant. Because 2 months ago, you were talking to how you were 8-0 against them.
Well, speaking of undefeated, my fantasy football team is undefeated, thanks to Tony leaving a running back for me and not paying attention, and a couple other lucky strokes, so I'm 3-0, going into a pretty easy matchup, I believe, and my team's looking good, my Brockton Blockbusters are undefeated, go figure, but anyway, outside of fantasy, there's some other news going on, too. Chris Areola lost to Klitschko. And
did you have that photo?
No, I can't find it anywhere, of course. And,
Rich, I watched the photo live, okay, and I'm going to give you my assessment on it. And I kind of said, when we were able to get 2 or 3 rows in last week, basically, what I said was going to happen in the fight, I thought Areola would have been a better match against Vladimir, the younger Klitschko brother, than Vitaly. The reason is Chris is a guy who does to put a lot of straightforward pressure on, but it doesn't give you a lot of head movement a la like Tyson or Joe Frazier or even Rocky Marciano. So he's something with a straight-ahead steamroller. And Vladimir is a guy that gets flustered under pressure and doesn't have confidence and his stamina was shit. So when guys rush him, he reels to, or it's an anxiety attack. Beats me because it's one of the two weeks that when you rush him, if you come shredded, he will beat you on the way in. And there were times that he took some pivoting out, like when Arizona got close, and a few times he out, like he took a little bit of clutching, but not much. And someone took a little bit of clutching, but he clutched him a few times. I said, that's not boxing. He clutched him when he got here close, he got pretty broken up. Because I got the butt to today and started hitting him. Ariola was too straight up, too square, and he was looking straight in to jabs and right hands all night. Now, hey, I give the guy a lot of credit that he stood up for 10 rounds. He didn't go down, but he took pretty firm for beating, and it was a good look at a quarter to stop it after the 10th round.
They'll do shit like that, but
I don't know what his contract is like either, so I'm wondering if there's going to be any dispute there. It seems to be pretty calm lately, but actually I heard an interview on Opie and Anthony, Dana White was on, and he said something like, he'll be back, he'll fight again, we'll make up. But anyway, getting back to the Ultimate Fighter show in Campbell, big country Roy Nelson, he's in training camp, and he looks good, he does what he does. He has probably, I don't know, I haven't really looked at his record, but I would say he's got like a good 30 fights under his belt, whether that's all pro or, pro and semi-amateur. But he's got at least 30 fights. And here he is coming on to a show where typically people have like 3-2 or 4-1, 7-0 if they're lucky records. Nobody's got like 10, 15 wins even. And here comes big country Roy Nelson, and he fights a guy like Kimbo, who he's like the reverse good luck, good fortune, instant superstar. He didn't have to do any work, really, except put a bunch of videos of him beating up bums on YouTube to get his fame, So he had everything given to him in reverse. He got everything up front, and now he's, going through the motions to try to prove himself. So people tend to think, he's just going to be dominant all across the board, but, this is like Mike Tyson during the Customato phase, He's a very humble guy. He's going to be great someday, but, they put the biggest buck, the craziest, most outrageous slugger against a guy with all the experience in the world. And I think Dana White did this on purpose for a lot of reasons, to fulfill the Rampage always losing thing, Another reason was because Big Country pretty much asked for it in the last episode. He said he wanted it. So I don't think anybody else in that house would have stepped up and said, I want to fight Kimbo. And of course, Rashad Evans hates Rampage so much, he wants him to lose, so he's going to pick Kimbo, and Kimbo was Rampage's greatest hope, because he bought into the hype. Anyway, it was an interesting fight, and Roy just basically said, I'm going to put him in what's called a crucifix, where you grab one arm between both of your legs, and then you get the other arm with one of your arms, and then you have a free hand to punch the guy in the head, So you're basically like laying like across on the guy's back. And he's got his arms. And there's Big Country with all 264 pounds of his belly flapping on Kimbo's head. And Rampage could have prepared Kimbo for that very well. He had his coaches, right, had this setup where they had the biggest guy on their team practicing with Kimbo, just laying on top of him to see what he could do from the ground, right? And, of course, Kimbo ends up in that position in the fight, but you know what? Rampage wouldn't even let him do it for more than a minute at a time. He kept calling the guy off of him, afraid that Kimbo couldn't handle it. But that's, he had to know that's exactly what Roy was going to do to him. So I wrote in the article, Kimbo can't bench 264. He couldn't push the guy off of him. But I don't think it really proves much. Dana White wasn't even happy with it. He said it was like, when his 2-year-old daughter hits him down the ground and starts smacking him in the head. That's what the punches were like that ended the fight. But Roy said it when he called it. He goes, it's like, when you're throwing unanswered strikes at a guy, you could just be kind of tapping him in the side of the face. Now that's an unanswered strike. Doesn't matter how hard it is. So he purposely did it like that. Yeah, this is how he fights. But
I was on an article today regarding him fighting his son. Obviously, but earlier on, I have to have a little bit of news, entertainment news, whether it's finance news and whether it's sports news and stuff like that. And if a quarterback, banned from whatever, I'm not going to get to that. Then I see, obviously, since it was mainstream, Kimbo's Fighters loses on Ultimate Fighter. So I click on it to read it. And it talks about the fight, and it talks about, how Dawson just pretty much kept him pinned on the ground. And when I was reading the fan comments, it just had the, I mean, absolutely stitches. He's like, the one guy was like, oh, what the hell? What was the name of Chris out in Roy Nelson for fighting that type of style with that rule on the stadium? That big wall was just laying on top of him. And then he hadn't even hit him that hard. And I'm like, well, you know, he must have done enough for them to stop the fight. And that's his style of fighting, you know, to use your size advantage, to use your size to an advantage, you know. Put the guy on the ground and just, you know, he's like, oh, he just fell on him, like, shot on him, and he's had him, like, three times. And I'm like, well, watch a boxing match then.
Well, it's funny you should say that because, you know, this is like a trend for the UFC that I don't think is very good. I'm not one of those people that's going to call for the collapse of MMA, but I'm telling you, they're going to hit a brick wall here pretty soon. And the numbers in the pay-per-view, it's another story we didn't talk about last week, the Floyd Mayweather versus Juan Manuel Marquez fight. Totally blew away the UFC card in the pay-per-view numbers. I haven't received any figures, but, you know, there's talk that it might be out even the UFC's best card for this year, which was, I believe, UFC 100.
Which I lost your card,
I was just talking about the pay-per-view buys for Juan Manuel versus Floyd.
He's hitting for a million football.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be a big test. I don't know exactly what the number's going to be, but we're going to see if it's going to match up with this UFC 100 card, which is their best offer of the year. And, right. And I just also saw an article the other day about how, you know, it's just like, you know, too many amateurs out there in MMA, which kind of raised my eyebrows and made me think, you know, and that's one thing where boxing has depth. It's kind of like a baseball team going into the playoffs, you know, as we're about to hit that season here in baseball. You know, you really got to have depth as a sport to survive and to keep up growth when you have a growth period. And I think the UFC, you know, especially looking at this crop of guys coming through the Ultimate Fighter, and one guy, really, Roy Nelson, he shouldn't even be on the show, and it kind of made me think, like, you know, these guys are lucky that they get this cleared under a reality show. You know, these coaches get to be the matchmaker. I mean, think about the potential for injury because you purposely choose a mismatch. I'd never thought about that before, but, like, you know, there actually has been a lawsuit over the Ultimate Fighter show. Mikey Burnett hurt himself, and it's still ongoing, I believe. I just checked on it last week.
Heavyweight Marcus Rhodes said a few weeks ago, and he's basically known for like a small fight, like Indiana or something, but then he'll step up to fight, you know, like a prospect, like an Eddie Chambers, and get knocked down in another 2 rounds. I mean, I've seen this guy get knocked down by a prospect he never fought. And he goes, hey, he goes, I'm just trying to make a living. He goes, you don't kick the Detroit Lions on the NFL for losing too much.
Right.
They have to run to a right to come play. But I'm like, you got to understand. And I'm like, here's a game where you're getting hurt. You know, I mean, you're taking punches. When a fighter gets knocked down on several occasions, you know, you're going to have concussions. You're going to have situations with repeated blows to the head, dementia, brain damage, pugilistic dementia, which is brain damage. As far as it's hard to keep a decent steady job after that.
Yeah, I mean, it's all wrong. Broken ribs, how are you going to get by like that?
Yeah, it's broken ribs.
Actually, my ribs feel a little bit better this week, but I'm pretty sure one of them is broken. I believe, I don't know if it's possible to, like, crack your breastplate where your rib is, like, right there.
Absolutely. How come you didn't?
I think that's what I did. It feels like I got shot right under the heart.
I'm reading the Hulk Hogan's book, and he said back to 1996 when King Kong won the Javelins in the big splash. He says it was close to his ankle, and he was hurt when he got to the hospital. He goes, I really was hurt. He goes, stop the knee, stand up. He goes, we put the knee in. He goes, but the thing is, he goes, the guy hit me from behind, and I put flex and
and it sucks because, like, of course, Dennis is asking all these questions now, like trying to get me hooked up with these other trainers that brought this other kid in to fight me. And they're all impressed because I have the guts to keep going, and get back up from that crap. And now they want to, to commit to me and all this other stuff. So I'm like, yeah. Be out for about 6 weeks. And they're all like, of course, you tell Dennis anything, too, and he's going to tell the whole world. So now everybody knows that I've got a broken rib. So this kid is going to think like he's God's greatest gift to boxing, that he broke my ribs.
It's not too good in that way. You can put a bullseye on them badly, too.
Yeah, right. And they say, if you break a bone, it's supposed to come back twice as strong, but that's not really true for ribs, I don't think, because you don't really get to use your ribs. Like, you can use an arm or a leg when it gets broken. So, I don't know if that's true. I've broken my ribs now about 4 or 5 times, so I don't think they're getting any stronger. Well, I just have to develop a better body block, because I know... I block to the head very well, because... if my ribs are hurting that bad, my head should be hurting half as bad. And he was throwing just as many shots in my head, but I was blocking most. Or avoiding.
Rich, earlier this week, I had you remember a few weeks ago we were watching and talking about the Mayweather Marquez 24/7?
Right.
And what was the most memorable moment of that?
Oh, of course, the urination beverage.
Remember the next episode
of Mayweather
Presents? He's just doing
Silverback gorilla
piss. Exactly. Well, this week, I had to go to drug test for my new job. This is the first time I've ever taken a drug test in my life. Our viewers are back to the FCPA. We had to thread a random drug test. I never took one. And then at my last job, I got hired there almost immediately. So they didn't give me a drug test. They knew me. And then, we only had brain drug tests for people that might have been suspecting, which was never me. So now I'm filling out paperwork, and I said, okay, you got to go in for a drug test. Now, I'd never taken one before, so I'm a little bit nervous. Not that it would come up on tape. I'm just nervous, I would fill it up enough. So that morning, doing these things, and I'm like, trying to drink some water, and I'm running some errands. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go up to this drug test now. And I'm like, okay, let me make sure, if I was going to go to bed, I'm like, I got to go, but I'm going to hold it. Which I'm just going to float the cup, and I'm sitting there with a fucking cup, and I'm like, that's some silverback gorilla piss, baby.
Did you think about taking a little off the top so you can fill it up, right?
That is some silverback gorilla piss.
That was actually more than anything, I mean, he can drink his own piss, you know, that doesn't shock me anymore. I've seen it and heard about it being done as a health mechanism more than one.
Well, and I can still see it, I can still get it, but I doubt that I'm still, because I'm actually holding it, like, in the cup, and I'm like, oh, you could do better, don't you?
We'll have to ask Kung Lee if he drinks his own urine. No, but no, anyway, it's been done and seen so many times. Actually, it was in another reality TV show before it was in this one, and it was about, like, an old child actors trying to recreate themselves, and, you know, people who are out of stardom. I forget what it was called, but one of the guys that was on that show had the same habit. And, so more than anything, you know, as far as, you know, whether you're interested in finding that lifestyle or not, the thing that blew me away about just watching that on the 24/7 show was just that he drank it right there on the spot. Straight out of the faucet, so to speak. Struck me as funny, like, go throw a few ice cubes in there. At least. I would like to at least fool my body into thinking that it was something that did not taste like yellow snow. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about upcoming events, I guess, a little bit later on. Kung Lee has a new movie out right, I believe it's out right now. It must be out in theaters right now. I know I see commercials for it. It's called Pandora. And I'm not sure whether if he has like a real big starring role or just like kind of a supporting role. But, you know, I've seen him on some late night TV shows and they show clips. And it's like a pretty sick movie. It's like, you know, the modern day Aliens, maybe. Might be that big. But it was pretty interesting. And we'll talk to him about that. And we'll try to get a handle on when he's going to be fighting next. Because I believe the last time he fought was against Frank.
Last fight was against Frank Shamrock about a year and a half ago, March 29th, 2008.
So we'll have to ask him too, on the same Rampage Jackson vein, whether the movie actually made it impossible for him to train.
Looking at his record here, which
I'm
actually really impressed. His MMA record, he was 6-0 with 2 knockouts.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
How about flawless victory? I call Mr. Lee a gun.
Yep, you are.
That reminded me the other night. I was watching some show, and actually it was the Opie and Anthony show where Dana White was had an interview, and they had Joe Frazier's phone number. And they called Joe Frazier, right? He's got this real funny message right here. He's like, at the end of it, he's like, call me. And they're making fun of the fact that he has an answering machine message that says, call me. Didn't he just do that? That's Joe Frazier. Yeah, but I mean, it's Opie and Anthony guys to have that easy access to Joe Frazier. Like, I was just telling you a couple weeks ago, why don't we interview Joe Frazier? What the hell?
Had a knife-wrap stoppage over fellow alumni of the contender, Jonathan Reed, and Jonathan, ever since he was on that show, has really gone downhill. And Shane is a real nice man, a family man, and maybe it's time for him to call a career. He's starting to take a lot of punishment now.
Yeah, actually, you know, I was getting ready to kind of go into this earlier. I finished the thought, you know, to about Kimbo's story. But I was going to say that, you know, MMA has really, really hit a brick wall with a lot of these younger guys and, you know, not really doing anything really exciting or big. Boxing just beat him with that big card, Floyd Mayweather card. No, I wouldn't be too surprised, you know, now that there aren't so many other organizations competing for the attention of the UFC, that their brothers that run the UFC are so sidetracked by this big casino bankruptcy, you know, you got the recession going on. They seem to be slowing down, if you've noticed. You know, it seemed like it was like every other week there was a UFC fight, you know, to slow down. Now it's not one until next month. So, actually, maybe at the end of this month there's one, but... things seem to be slowing down, and I think boxing is going to make a lot of headway in the meantime. And now they're already looking forward to the next big huge boxing fight, which is going to be Miguel Cotto and Manny Pacquiao. And now it seems like me too, but I'm not as excited as you because I think that Miguel Cotto's best days might be behind him. I just don't see anybody really testing Pacquiao's speed and power combination there. The fight I more want to see is Mosley versus Mayweather and Paul Williams versus Kelly Kaplan. Body and negate that reach and then get inside and get inside and
Tomlin has a better body punch than this. What do you think better for? You go back to his second fight with Jermaine Taylor, when he beat Taylor by decision. And Taylor was winning that fight early. And he actually hurt Taylor real good until he was fighting with a body shot. He hit him with a right hand to the body, with a right hook on this, the rib area. And you could see Taylor actually pick his leg up and really, really showed a lot of pain in his face. And really, damn, Tomlin can hit the body, and especially if you're not about large target to hit the body to go in the wings. If I was Jack Bell, I'd tell the guy with the trainer, I wouldn't kick up him to throw a lot of jabs in Williams' chest and try to punch Williams. Because Tomlin is a bigger, he's a little bit more of a physical guy, he's fought bigger guys. His problem against Bernard Hopkins is Hopkins not only was a little bit quicker, but Hopkins is such a slow boxer. He knows how to take a very aggressive fighter and use that against him. He did that against Bill Trinidad 8 years ago. He brought Trinidad straight in, and then he just, you know, as he said before the fight, he goes, with Trinidad, and most people can't get away from it, he goes, before he throws that big left hook, he does a little stutter step. He goes, whenever I saw him do that stutter step, I go, that's good to my left.
Wow.
So my foot got was bigger, and then I dropped the kind of one too. He goes, he couldn't get away from it. That's what he also did to Kelly Pavlik. He just said, Pavlik, come in. He stopped it before Pavlik could eliminate his offense, then he was on the side again. Reeves is not going to do that. Reeves is going to be a guy that's going to try to, you know what? No, I'm going to try to overwhelm you with my offense, not count you as much. Reeves is going to want to be the aggressor. Now, point to the problem, and I saw this in the later rounds against Cincinnati's Margarito when Margarito caught him. And in the fight that he lost to Carlos Quintana, their first fight, Queens with those real long arms had low shoulders, like his shoulders stuck low, where he doesn't use his shoulders to protect his jawline, and punches that are thrown looping, like left hooks and overhand rights, were land.
Right.
It land working on the chin. Now the thing is, if he's pressing that offense to try to back Pavlik up, knocked out Andy Carl it was a 17-1 going in one round. And a strong TKO, Roberto Phillips, who was a former world champion, and then a near shutout winner with Ricky Wright, who was coming off a long way off. But now the thing with all these fighters is they were all, when I say smaller, I mean sometimes our fighters that were giving up, except for Carly, who was about maybe an inch or two shorter. These were all fighters that were smaller guys. Ricky Wright was one of them. 5'9", 5'10" on a good day. Staying right here, 5'10". Vernon Phillips was a former welterweight junior middleweight, and was 5'7.5". Here's the situation where a guy that
I'm talking with Spike Webb.
He's a younger, fresher guy, using his hand speed. My thing, and I don't know if he can. I think Pavlov can take Williams' punch. I'm not sure if Williams can take Pavlov because of Pavlov's natural power.
We're going to see if Pumley can take natural power. Good questions. Do you think he can do it?
We don't know. I mean, do you want to try to calm that down? Do you want to go to the schedule for it?
Bergeron, how's it going?
It's going good.
Did you get my little message there?
I did it. I was feeding my boys.
Oh, all right. Well, this is the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show here. You got some time for an interview here? Hello?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Well, I don't know if you remember me, I want to say about 3 years ago, you were one of the first interviews that I had done for Fight News Unlimited when we were just starting out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was way back when. You didn't have as much to talk about, I don't think. You were 17-0 at the time in Sanshu. Is that your record there?
Well, I have 6 MMA fights now. So.
You have 6 MMA fights. You were 2-0 in MMA at the time, so
a couple years ago,
yeah. But anyway, it's great to catch up with you, and I understand you got a big movie coming out, Pandorum, right?
Imagine you teach me the German code, and You told me that you had a project going, this is last year, I think May or June, and you said that there's a Japanese character that they're looking to cast, but they haven't found the right Japanese character, so they opened up to all, all Asian characters, and then, when I got the script, very excited about them, and then finally I got an audition, and, a couple of days later, they called and they liked my audition and the negotiation process down there. Once you're out and then filming Pandora for 2.5 months.
Now, is that payday a little bit better than a typical MMA fight or what?
When you get a really big part like that, definitely pay pretty good. But, the experience of working with like Dennis Quaid and Ben Foster was pretty amazing too. And, the director, Christian Albert, Jeremy Bolts, Robert Bolts are not a lot. And I got a lot of experience.
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that we're talking to you now. We were mentioning this earlier that Rampage Jackson is in the news lately for quitting the UFC to pursue acting. I was wondering if you had any advice for him.
Well, I don't know the relationship between Rampage and Dana and how it all went down, but, he has an opportunity and he's taking advantage of it. My advice is, good luck and, don't hit the roots.
We have a co-host, Tony the Tornado, NFL.
Yeah, you get disconnected.
Are you going to ask a question there, Tony?
Yes, I'll ask a question. I'm back on the line now. I've talked to some people that have dabbled in both the fighting field. I've done more of my career in the boxing field, but I know some guys that have done boxing and they went on and they've done a little bit in the acting field. And obviously both are different styles of discipline and training. I mean, acting, you have to memorize and you have to do some physical stuff over and over and over again. What is more demanding on you physically and mentally?
Fighting is more demanding. Fighting is more demanding. There is someone really trying to hurt you. And in a movie, you got a couple takes or a double take. So, it's definitely fighting is demanding. Both mentally and physically.
One of the things we were also talking about in relation to Rampage there is while you were doing the movie, was it a situation where there was so much work involved that there was no possible way you could train for MMA, or were you just decided to take a break from it to focus more on the movie?
In the beginning of my career, I was only able to do small movies. And fight at the same time, that was, possible. But now the roles get bigger, and when you spend more time on the set, you can't train for a fight and prepare, your opponent and do the movie. It's just impossible.
So you find yourself beating up cast members every now and then to release your frustration? So.
Not at all. I mean, and make sure you stay in shape the best you could and perform at the highest you could for the director and the producers.
Right. So, I think in this role that you have, and this is kind of like a supporting actor, you could be up for an Oscar, if that's that good.
One at a time, even some films out there with, small parts, like with Channing Tatum, Terrence Howard, and fighting had a small role as a fighter. Pandora might have a very big part, supporting lead, and you just gotta take it one day at a time and you know, build yourself.
Right. So tell us about the whole storyline. What's the concept of the movie here and there?
The concept is basically, you know, Earth is dying and they send like a Noah's Ark into, you know, into space to go to a different solar system to look for this planet called Tanis. And basically, you know, it takes a long time. It's not like a contract where they can beam you from one solar system to another, so it takes a long time to get to one solar system to another. And basically, everyone is put into a sleep chamber, like, you know, like, and then preserved that way. And then, you know, when you get there, then, you know, you wake up. But what happened was also every crew members to a cycle, and I don't know how many cycles there was, but you know, all the two crew members wake up and they find out that, you know, that they're alone on the ship. They don't know what's going on. They have memory loss because they've been asleep so long. So one of the members starts exploring the ship, and that's not Foster, and he finds out, you know, all kinds of things are going, you know, wrong with the ship, and react about to go out, the ship is dying, and then I rescued him from danger, and we came up, and we tried to get the reactor going again.
Now, did you have to have a stuntman, or did they make you do your own stunts since you're, you know, physically fit?
The stuntman, but he was very, he basically didn't, you know, so I think I didn't understand all my stuff.
So he had a comfortable chair. So now going back to the fighting, I know you're focused more on the movie now, but we've actually had Frank Shamrock on the show 3 times and Ken Shamrock twice. And I know that there was a lot of you know, back and forth, a lot of smack talk before that Frank fight. One of the things that amazed me most about that fight is that at one point it seemed to be like one of those bad kung fu movies where it's edited so that it just looks ridiculously, you know, funny the way that you guys get beat up and get kicked from all different directions. And it was like you were slapping him in the face with your foot at one point. It was just such a dominant performance. And can you just kind of look back at that and tell us how important that fight was to you and what that meant to you?
Well, that fight was the most important fight in my career. And I was never good. I didn't talk much. And I let Frank do all the talking. And when it came to it, I came out on top.
No, it's really, I don't think there's anybody in mixed martial arts with that kind of skill set and striking. You know, do you think a lot about, you know, your next move in MMA and back to it? Do you have a timetable or anything?
There's a project that I'm waiting for. There's a green light this year. Then most likely I'll be fighting at the end of the year, if not early next year.
Mm-hmm.
That's one.
And do you have like an agreement going still with Strike Force or the Independence?
That's contract with them. So my specifically for Strike Force.
What do you think about
Herschel
Walker signing up with
him? Good deal. He wants to get in there and try out MMA. That's a big name going into the sport. I'll support him. It's also MMA mainstream now. Everyone wants to part of it or watch it. You know, Herschel Walker wants to stuff. You know, go there and compete in MMA. That's good. That just shows how popular MMA is getting.
Awesome. Now, as you've been doing the movie, have you still been going to fighting events to watch and hang out and, you know, still following those circles and, you know, keeping up with the sport and all that?
Of course. I still show up at the Strike Force event in San Jose. And if I'm not in San Jose, I'm on set, then I tune in or follow it by the internet.
Cool. And
I'm on the internet. I've done two movies in China, one in 2008, December, and also this year in May and in July. I had to go back and finish up my shooting in July. So those are exciting to be part of, you know, the American market and also the Canadian market and also the MMA. Well, I want that. So I'm always, you know, that's my roots. So I'm always going to follow it.
Now, I mean, obviously now that you have the experience of the movie to compare with MMA, and, you know, there has been a lot of talk about mixed martial arts kind of dragging behind boxing as far as paydays. Is he at a point where some people like you and some other people that move on from MMA and become successful in movies and stuff start to try to inspire more of a movement towards that for other fighters and try to maybe put a fire under the bus to the promoters to start to ban these guys more maybe so that they won't go off and start doing movies forever?
Well, I can't really answer that. You know, I go that page myself, in Brandy's youngest movie, you know, I hear a lot of other movies have, you know, tried, you know, smaller budget movies, and, you know, I think if the opportunity is there, you know, of course, you know, athletes like us will take advantage of it, and I'm sure about the curtain. I'm sure it's going to go up. I just don't know if it's going to be like boxing, you know, in this decade. So, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, a lot of us, the fighters, really fight for the love of it. You know, but obviously, you don't even come close to some of those boxing courses. But at the same time, not everyone in boxing can pay like those handful of guys that get paid like that. So, you know, and in MMA, there's a smaller handful of guys that can beat certain figures, so, you know, we just all gotta work hard and, you know, make the thing and come across the truth.
Well, it seems like they make it easier in Strikeforce and some of these other leagues than they do in the UFC for you to do outside stuff, period. Like, you know, the UFC is super secretive and very protective of their fighters, and there was even talk of sponsors now having to pay $100,000 basically finder's fees to the UFC just to talk to fighters and negotiate for sponsorship. Whereas that used to be the only outlet that the fighters had to get outside pay.
Character was a fighter, and also Tekken was a video game, and then I've done a movie that has not been released, so it's for a DVD with Victor in Eric Roberts, Jared Busey, Zawa. But, you know, I play, a fighter that goes on the run because my father gets set up, and, that hasn't been released on YouTube yet. So I've done six movies that are, with some decent name actors, and five projects with the studio, China, Hong Kong, and over here. So I've been, I got a good run going in the last 2.5 years.
What do you think about the, have you seen this, the new Ong Bak movie, Ong Bak 2 there?
One, I have not seen part 2.
I just, actually, I just got a couple of emails about it this last week. I know that my cousin introduced me to the first one, and I couldn't believe it. And, then I started seeing you fight, you kind of always remind me of it. I mean, he was very unconventional with his strikes. It was always funny to me how he would come straight down and elbow you on the top of the head, which is obviously illegal in MMA, but it was an incredible move for a movie.
I'm working with a lot of big name actors, and I hope to get to the
Back back towards the strike force situation. Are you looking to get a title belt or you know, move up or down in weight or anything like that? Are you thinking anything along those lines, or are you just pretty much still in movie mode right now?
I'm still moving over now. You know, I vacated my middleweight title belt. Jake Shields and Dan Miller, they're going to fight for the belt that I vacated because I've been off to the movies for the last 18 months, and I just felt like it wasn't fair to get to the belt, so I took a step back and vacated the belt. But, you know, when I come back, I'll do super fights, and, you know, if I'm sharp, and I feel like, strong enough and healthy enough to go after another title, then I'll do it. But right now, it's just, you know, I'm just enjoying, my career, and also, you know, I still love to train, and I still love to compete. So when I come back, I'm just, you know, fight, a super fight, because, you know, I've been a little bit champ-worthy, and I'm going back and competing at the highest level I could, and just enjoying myself.
So you pretty much sound like you don't want to get typecast in any kind of martial arts character situation. You want to be a serious actor, no matter what. But does it seem like you always end up doing some kind of fighting or major physical exercise in your movies so far?
I feel like I'm not being stereotyped right now. You know, I'm going with the sci-fi, but you know, it's If I fight the movie, great, because that's my strong point right now. And yeah, I've been working a lot on my acting, but a lot of actors out there, they need the stunt doubles or they need to learn how to fight to do it in the movie. And luckily that for me, that's not the case. You know, I can go in there and I'm working on my acting to be a better actor, and go in there and deliver a great fight scene and choreograph my own fight scene.
Gets him down on the ground. MMA, which
So I wouldn't play for Strike Force.
I mean, he was very unconventional. Is the strength of the sport at the moment? Do you think it's
MLB is here to stay. It's the fast growing contact sport. It's like wildfire. It's like, you know, it's a matter of time before, you know, I think, you know, boxing, yeah, it looks great, but, you know, MMA hasn't been around as long as boxing, and for the short amount of time MMA has been around, leaps and bounds over boxing. So, take that away from boxing. I'm a big fan of watch boxing, but it's not like watching, you know, someone who's putting it all together from punching, kicking, kneeing, throwing, and sweeping, and then looking for submission, big ground and pound. That's like the whole, you know, that's the cream of the, you know, cream of the crop and the top of the food chain for
right.
So.
Now, do you still do any sand shoe stuff?
I can train the art, and then I implemented it in the MMA, and, you know, I'm still sticking to, you know, what I'm good at and work on what I'm not good at, and that's the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and, you know, just try to be a complete martial artist.
Now, that's not one of those disciplines that you hear too often in fighters' repertoire. Does it help having something that's kind of exotic like that in your bag of tricks as a fighter?
You know, it's a martial arts never-ending learning process, so, you know, I can different things from different style too, and, you know, it is good to have something that other martial arts haven't, other MMA fighters haven't seen much of, because then they're not used to defending against it, but, you know, it's just, you know, you gotta be a student of the game all the time. You can never learn enough.
Seems like, actually, especially in the UFC, a lot of these guys who have been around forever and, you know, trademarked almost their own styles are really starting to get their butts handed to them by the new wave students that are coming up through the system. They're just, you know, they're adapting so well and just mixing their game together in all different capacities. Guys like Lyoto Machida are bringing more attention to karate. You know, schooling all these old guys. Anderson Silva just continues to dominate with just amazing reach and on elbows and knees, long Muay Thai. Just seems like you know, some of these guys that built the UFC and some of the other leagues are starting to fall apart against these young students. So.
I think the game is evolving. Everyone's getting better. You know, I would say some of the older guys get beat up all the time. I'm just thinking, you know, some of the younger guys are coming in a little bit more hungry and you know, well, a better prepared. And, you know, and it just comes down to, you know, who's paid and, you know, sometimes it's not the draw and sometimes it's not, you know, but I definitely got some guys up and they're up and coming and they're hungry and they train. With different martial arts and, you know, their competition is, you know, scientific and they're out there and they just get the job done. And you know, you can't respond with this sport or you'll be extinct.
Now, is there anybody out there in the strike force or otherwise that you really definitely love to fight if you could make it happen?
Yeah, you know, that's cool. I just prepare myself to whoever they put me up with, and then I go in there, you know, to the best of my condition, my abilities, and, you know, my fight game, and just try to do my job. I challenge myself. I don't go out there. I don't need to beat anyone, you know, and just winning the battle of your mind that, you know, every day challenging yourself is, you know, enough for me, you know. Life is so short, you know, but I just think this guy, he's got a guy that's just a kind of high level, and if the opponent, you know, is undefeated or if I have a good one streak, it just makes it more exciting to see them compete again.
So when you do decide eventually to get back into training mode, is it going to be like that much of a big deal to get back into that mode? Have you been kind of relaxed? Or is it just a matter of, you know, you're always training in some way, just in a smaller portion than you used to for a fight?
Always training. I'm trying to run around back and forth on my round game, but when I come back, I'm just going to make sure I do it slow and make sure I don't injure myself trying to rush back in, it's the slow process, and I'm just starting to talk about my training.
Well, it's been great to reconnect with you. It was kind of a quick, short little interview the first time. Didn't have as much time. You're only 2-0 then, but we knew you were going to make some waves, and you have. And back when you beat Frank, I still don't really see anybody, especially in Strikeforce, that could give you a real run for your money. Frank did a pretty good job, but he's more of an old school, basic 1-2 and leg kick type of fighter, and you made him look silly. He's a great fighter, with all that, with all those basics. And I think that there's not too many people out there who can even make you sweat. I disagree.
But I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that they can reach out to fight me. So I'm human too, and whatever first thing fighter comes in prepared, I'm sure the whole team. A good show, have the best fight that you can have, and that's, the best that, I can ask for. And, win, lose, or draw, train like a champion, you win like a champion, and for some reason, if I lose, I'll lose like a champion.
Well, you have a good attitude, and it sounds like you have a lot going for you, and I'll definitely look forward to seeing you in Pandora. It's going to be a good movie, and let's hope it starts driving some numbers at the box office and you get something to keep it going. Sounds like you're really interested in it, take it seriously, and you're good at it. So, if it's anything like your fighting style, I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll have fun at the
movies. Well, it's been great.
All right, thank you.
Great catching up with you, and talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
You too.
I don't want to talk too much. You got such a flaw going on. For the fact that you know about this project, I was like, there doesn't really much to be had.
Yeah, I guess that's good. I kind of felt like I was losing my voice. I was talking too much myself.
No, that's okay, because I could. The next few days, I haven't had a chance to watch a whole lot of things. Except for the position I'm on last week, I haven't watched it, followed a whole lot of boxing. Obviously, I got the results from my partner's not seen last week. And right now, it's Sunday, I won't be going down, but my weekend was pretty busy. And just this week alone, with the whole new job thing and all my tests done, and then. You're gonna get a kick out of this. I already got a promotion.
Oh, nice.
I'm sorry. What was happening with them were the original job posted was for like a customer service job, decent money more than I was making my last job, and we're gonna take 2 weeks of training in a section outside of Philadelphia that's about an hour from where I live, and it's gonna be 2 days to get there, but. If there's an opportunity, you just got to bite the bullet and do it. And the guy came back to me, what was happening was I was thinking the position of someone else and then they were considering firing. But I guess that the head managers didn't want to fire this person, saying, they didn't want to lose me. These big hands, and I couldn't get rid of this other person. So they offered me a paying job. I'm talking about an additional $68 a year. So I'm liking that because that's a And they were arguing. The argument was money. Hopkins said, you know, let's go 50-50. And Joe said, no, we won't fight unless it's 70-40, but I prefer 70-30. And it was a big hang up. And then a couple years later, after Joe has two losses, they were talking about it again. He thought it was on the side, but then it came to money again. And now Hopkins is saying,
knockout. He's playing Parkinson's. He's a 25-0-1.
knockouts. With Ian Swan Smith, it's 16-1-1. It's Henry Crawford, 24-1 with 9 knockouts. And a very interesting fight on here, and I mentioned this guy on a couple of occasions, is Tyrone Johnson out of Philadelphia. Has a fought over here. Started his career with 19 consecutive first round knockouts. 19-0-1 with 19 knockouts all in the first round. The only time he went past the first round, which was his last fight, ended up in a 6-round draw. He's fighting a very tough and durable fight on him with Marcos Primera. 14-19 with 2 draws. Well, Marcos Primera, he can get you around. So, there's a good out there, but I've seen him play live. He's just tough. He's relentless. I guarantee he can do lots of more than one round. That was how Bronson Probst played in one round, which obviously he's unaccustomed to. And also on the card, because there's a heavyweight, the coolest name in the world that you could add, what if the guy, he's actually the former Penn State guy, I don't know if he's up for it, he didn't mind, but his name's Tor Fever, P-J-T-E-R. I seen him play on ESPN. Now, if I was his manager, I would make him go get his name Ziggy Jake the Hammer. Because what sounds cooler, Tor Hamer or Tor Hammer? I would say Hammer.
He's probably called Tor the Hammer Hater.
We got the fight with Philadelphia on Friday night. We got Randy Cash, the Israeli combat soldier, fighting Barry Gomez. Randy is 20-0 with 15 knockouts. Had the win over Dave Brunelli last time, his stoppage. And Gary Gomez, 18-10 with 7 knockouts. We got Farrell Jones, who actually, these young players only had one fight. He's been training for years at BioJet down in South Philly, and there's some former trainers that I knew very well down there. Darryl's 1-0 knockout. He's fighting, he's looking good team for you. Mohamed Tuba.
Is he going to play the tuba?
We'll see.
The big event over in London on Friday. Prize fighter starts on Friday. Big tournament, heavyweight.
We've got 3x3 rounds on these matchups here. The bracket is Ian Perkins 4-0 versus Danny Hughes 6-0. I'm sure going here all these guys are having with Danny Williams, the most experienced guy, 40 versus 7. 31 knockouts. He's fighting Carl Baker, who's 8-3, 6 knockouts. That's a good tournament. And also, 18-4 with 1 draw and 9 knockouts. Fighting Coleman Barrett, undefeated at 8-0, only 2 knockouts. And then finally, Audie Harrison, 23-4 with 17 knockouts, and Scott Belshaw,